Thank you for making Locked On Yankees your first listen every day. We're free and available on all platforms. On today's show, we're going to talk about why Anthony Rizzo didn't sign with the Yankees before the lockout. Could Gio Urshela be the Yankees' shortstop solution? Aaron Judge got married this weekend, and I think I forgot to congratulate him on yesterday's show. And we have a random game of the day from way back in 1974. All next on Locked On Yankees.
You are Locked On Yankees, your daily New York Yankees podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Stacey Katsoulias. I'm the host of Locked On Yankees. Welcome to the show. It is Tuesday, December 14th. You're 11 days away from Christmas. If you haven't gotten your presents yet, what are you waiting for? I am mostly done with mine. I have a couple more to go, but for me, this is pretty good. Being done, or nearly done, on December 14th. December 14th, why does that ring a bell? Was there a free agent signing on December 14th? I wonder. Anyway, before I get into the show, you can listen on Apple, Google, Odyssey, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can watch and subscribe to us on YouTube. And if you have a smart device, tell it to play Locked On Yankees. Pretty simple. It actually works. I've tried it. We have some things to talk about. You know, obviously nothing major with the lockout going on. There's a lot of nothingness happening in baseball. Thankfully, players are going on other podcasts and talking, like Anthony Rizzo. So we have some comments from him. It's better than Ben Affleck's appearance on Howard Stern earlier today. If you don't know what I'm talking about, look that up. Google. I don't know. Sometimes it's better to keep some things to yourself. I know that Howard Stern is like the king of interviewing, and he gets people to really reveal stuff about themselves, but Oh, and I forgot yesterday when I was talking about Jason Giambi and I was talking about a game in which he hit a monster home run against Cleveland, I was going through the lineup and talking about the guys from Cleveland, and I mentioned how Travis Hafner nearly killed me. And I know I mentioned this story before on the show, but in case you're a newbie, in case you're tuning in for the first time and watching or listening to me, I was at Game 5 of the Division Series in 2007. No, it was not fun. That was the first time I was at a playoff division loss, a series loss, like the game that led to the Yankees being an elimination game. There we go. That's what I was trying to come up with. Thank you, brain, for suddenly working. My seats were in the first row of the upper deck in right field, which I thought was cool at first. And then we got down to our seats during Cleveland's batting practice, and Travis Hafner was hitting balls into the upper deck. And as far away as the upper deck was in the old stadium and how high it was, those balls are flying at you. He nearly killed me twice. And I said to my friend, you know what? I'm going to go up there and wait for batting practice to be over because I have wonky eyes. I have no hand-eye coordination. I was never much of an athlete, and I don't want to die tonight. Then after the game ended, I rethought that and, you know, was like, maybe I should have. No, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. Anyway, you don't realize how fast those balls are coming at you. This sounds so bad, but it's true. Like I said, even in the first row of the upper deck, like Tino's Grand Slam against San Diego, I don't know. Did someone catch that or did it bounce out? Now I can't remember. I think it bounced out, right? And then you see the beer fly because someone, you know, threw their beer in the air. Yeah. So, yeah, Travis Hafner nearly killed me during BP. And I still haven't forgiven him. And it's how many years? 14? And even when he was on the Yankees, I still, you know, looked at him like, ew, you nearly killed me 7 years ago or whenever. When was he on the Yankees? 2013 or 2014? Somewhere around there. One of those two weird-ass teams that the Yankees trotted out in the mid-2010s. So Anthony Rizzo was on a podcast with Ian Happ, Compound podcast with Ian Happ, and he said that he enjoyed his first foray into free agency until MLB locked out the players, of course, and that halted everything. He said, you get all these teams calling you and saying how much they like you instead of the team bashing you and saying why you're not good enough anymore, which he's referring to arbitration. Arbitration is horrible. I will never forget Dylan Betances being trashed by Randy Levine. When that stuff came out, I was so angry for Dylan Betances. And I know that's how arbitration's supposed to go, because the team has to come out and try and make a case for them to not pay a player a certain amount. And the player has to come out and say, well, this is what I'm worth. This is why I should get this. And that's how it works. But it is kind of amazing that the teams, basically what arbitration is them bashing the players and saying, no, you're not worth this. You're horrible. Ugh. See, I wouldn't have the stomach for that. Would you? No, I definitely wouldn't. I couldn't take that. No, that would, I'd be crying. Maybe some of these guys go home and cry after the arbitration hearings, because it sounds rough. Like, seriously. So he said, so it's a recruiting process. It's fun getting the calls and hearing what the teams had to say and why they want me and why I'm a good fit. But at the end of it, the right sort of deals didn't come to fruition at the deadline. And now you just sit and wait. Now, Brian Cashman said he's been in contact with Rizzo's agent. And, you know, back in 2013, he signed a 9-year, $73 million deal with the Cubs. And he made $16.5 million in 2021. Rizzo's 32. It's possible the Yankees could sign him to come back, but, you know, there are other options. Matt Olson has been linked to the Yankees. You know that the A's are kind of blowing things up, and if the Yankees can come up with a good trade package for Matt Olson, Jason Burke and I went through that. Was that last? Yeah, that was last month. In our crossover episode, Jason came to me with a possible trade package, and I think I agreed with most of it. Right? And I know some people who were watching didn't mind the trade package, because I know that's kind of iffy and some people get touchy with the Yankees giving away too many pieces. But overall, it was a positive show. People were actually receptive to Jason's idea. So Jason likes that. He says thank you, by the way. You know, the Yankees still have Voit. They also have DJ LeMahieu. I mean, he's played first base. But Rizzo said he likes playing in New York. Now, he hit 249 with 8 home runs. Drove in 21 runs. He had a 768 OPS in 49 games with the Yankees. And that was after spending 10 whole seasons with the Cubs. He said, it's great. You go from playing at Wrigley Field and the Cubs to New York and Yankee Stadium. What more could you ask for? Getting traded from one big market to another. But the time in New York was great. We loved it. We lived in the Upper West Side, lived near Central Park. He took his son to the park nearly every morning. And he got to live in the city for 2 to 3 months and enjoy the city for 2 to 3 months. Good for you. I mean, I wouldn't mind living near Central Park. That must be actually really nice. I cat sit on the west side and on the east side near Central Park, and being able to walk to Central Park and just do whatever you want is really the best thing. And I think that when the Yankees are trying to recruit guys to come here and they're a little iffy about being in a bigger city, talk to them about the Upper West Side and the Upper East Side so they're near a park and they can see that there's greenery here and it's not just tall buildings and scary stuff. Anyway, speaking of teams and all that stuff, Yankee fans, it's already been an interesting offseason. It won't be long before pitchers and catchers report, hopefully. I'm going to give you the inside track on the absolute best fantasy baseball platform in the industry. It's Fantrax. Fantrax is the most customizable MLB fantasy platform in the industry, offering the greatest fantasy experience for your dynasty, keeper, redraft, and best ball leagues. Create or join a fantasy baseball commissioner league, invite your friends, and dominate your draft this season. It's also the top dynasty fantasy baseball platform in the industry. Go deep with the ultimate keeper and dynasty leagues, create a simple redraft league, or even a customizable best ball league with up to 2,000 teams. Coming from another service, Fantrax can import any of your current leagues and customize if needed. Ever have a trade go wrong or make a mistake in dropping a player? Fantrax commissioner tools allow you to undo any move with a simple click. Among the most trusted names in fantasy sports since 2008, Fantrax invites you to sign up today for free. If you do, you'll be entered to win an official MLB-signed Fernando Tatis Jr. baseball. Simply go to Fantrax.com/LockedOn and and use the promo code TATIS when you sign up, and you'll be eligible to win. If there's anything lacking in your current fantasy league manager, Fantrax has it. Fantasy sports doesn't sleep, and neither does Fantrax. With seasons running 365 days a year, there's a reason why fantasy players who try Fantrax make it the permanent home for their fantasy leagues. Don't miss this opportunity. Again, sign up today. You can win an official MLB-signed Fernando Tatis baseball. Simply go to Fantrax/LockedOn and use promo code TATIS, T-A-T-I-S, in case you don't know how it's spelled. Fantrax, the home of fantasy baseball. Play ball. Now, does this sound familiar? You've got one device that lets you catch the game live, another that lets you stream your favorite shows, you're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your neighbor's best friend login, or best friend's login for the good stuff? Well, I want to tell you a simple way to get all that entertainment you love without the hassle, and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes, and no need to buy another device ever again. Best part? There's no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device required, and the content varies by package. Thanks again for making Locked On Yankees your first listen every day. We're free and available on all platforms. So Pinstripe Alley, let's see, Esteban Rivera wrote an article today about possibly Gio Urshela being the Yankees' solution to their shortstop problem in case they don't go after Carlos Correa, which I know some of you, I've gotten tweets from people who don't agree with me and don't want Carlos Correa on the Yankees, but sorry, I do. Actually, at this point, I'd even deal with Trevor Story. Just get someone who plays shortstop, please. Although, I mean, I would prefer Carlos Correa because he can actually play shortstop. But the idea that the Yankees, instead of going after a stopgap shortstop and using Gio Urshela and then maybe shoring up at third, could be interesting, but I don't know. I don't know if I like that idea. I'm really not sure. By the way, the article is actually written by John Griffin. The link that was provided on Google was not correct, and it took me to an article about Joey Gallo. No offense to Joey Gallo, and, you know, Bryce, host of Locked On Rangers, would love for me to talk about Joey Gallo, his boyfriend, but we're not. We're talking about Gio Urshela. So, I don't know. You know, there's no Corey Seager left, no Marcus Semien, no Javier Baez, because they all signed with other people. The Yankees have soured on Trevor Story, whatever that means. And, you know, there were rumors going around that maybe the Yankees will do stopgap shortstops, looking at Andradelton Simmons. Why can't I say that name right on the first try? Isaiah Kiner-Falefa as stopgaps until their prospects make it. But Yankees and prospects, kind of iffy, and I almost feel as if I wouldn't trade Anthony Volpe and I wouldn't trade Peraza, but I don't know. I just really want Carlos Correa. That's really bad, I know, but I do. He's the best option out there. And, you know, I know it's the cheating thing. I know that he acts like a jackass, and I know that he opens his mouth a lot, and he said horrible things about Derek Jeter. So did A-Rod. And the Yankees still brought him over. The A-Rod thing happened in 2001. And the Yankees traded for him in 2004. They didn't care. Derek Jeter sucked it up and allowed it to happen. Derek Jeter is no longer a Yankee. Doesn't matter. He's part owner of the Marlins. I know that in some Yankee fans' eyes, he is looked at as a god. I get it. But Carlos Correa was not wrong about Derek Jeter, and I've said this many times, and I'm going to say it again. So if you've listened to me say this, I'm sorry I'm saying it again. If you've never listened to me talk about this, when did Derek Jeter start winning his gold gloves? When A-Rod was traded to the Yankees, he won his first gold glove in 2004, the year we don't like to talk about. Yeah. I wonder why that is. Yeah, and A-Rod was the far superior defensively shortstop And because it was Derek Jeter's team, he said, I'll go to third base. I'll learn how to play third. No problem. Correa was right. Jeter was horrible at defense. A lot of those plays that he made, you know, the over-the-shoulder throw was basically because he couldn't make regular throws. He made simple plays look more difficult. I don't know how many times I talked about Jason Giambi yesterday. And yes, I know he was a statue at first base, but that man could scoop with the best of them. And I can't tell you how many times I saw that man save Derek Jeter's ass when Derek Jeter was throwing a first, bouncing throws from shortstop. And this was relatively early-ish in Derek Jeter's career. You know, he hadn't even made it to 10 years yet when Giambi first got there. So Correa was right. He should be the Yankee shortstop. But I think that having Gio Urshela as an option to play more than just third base is a good idea. But if you have the chance to sign Carlos Correa, you sign Carlos Correa. And plus, with this lockout, baseball fans are not very happy with owners right now, Hal. And I think it would be in your best interest to get the best player available to fill that hole that you have in the middle of the infield. Maybe? I don't know. Speaking of Hal, he put out a statement today congratulating the New York City Football Club for winning the MLS championship. By the way, we have a championship-winning team that plays their home games at Yankee Stadium. That's pretty cool. May not be the Yankees, but hey, a New York team won a championship. And now all the bridges are lit up, including the Mario Cuomo Bridge, which used to be, the old Tappan Zee crossed in the same spot, and now it's the Mario Cuomo Bridge, and all of its legs are lit up in blue. The Empire State Building's lit up in blue. I think that's pretty cool. But Hal put out a nice statement for the football club, and a lot of people were having reactions to that just because it's been a while since Hal has put out a statement about the Yankees winning anything. So, anyway. So, yeah, Gio Urshela, fine. You know, if he fills in, you know, once every 2 weeks when Correa maybe DHs, that would be fine. But no, I don't want to see Gio Urshela playing shortstop every day. No, no. Do not do that. Thank you. Oh, it's time for me to talk about comfy socks and underwear and hoodies and all that stuff. Stance Apparel. Very soft. Abby was on with me the other day. Said her dad and her brother love Stance socks. In our group DM, all the Locked On hosts, a few of them were talking about all the different socks they liked. As I mentioned, one of the pairs of Reds socks, not Red socks, Reds socks, were Joey Votto socks, which is like the coolest thing. But anyway, Stance is amazing. They're not boring. They're colorful. They're in so many different designs and there's so many collaborations. It's really cool. Founded in 2009, Stance Apparel represents a radical reinvention of socks, underwear, and active apparel. With a sharp focus on comfort, quality, and creativity, Stance brings an atypical aesthetic alongside some of pop culture's hottest collaborators for the ultimate in style and self-expression, because everything you would wear, or everything you wear, should be a direct extension of who you are and how you feel. As I said, plenty of baseball designs, you have NBA designs, Star Wars, Batman, Disney, Marvel, Pixar, pretty cool. Stance believes that the perfect fit matters more than fitting in, that those who feel good do good. Go see for yourself, register for an account at stance.com, and get 15% off your first purchase. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON at checkout to apply and enjoy the color and comfort of a life less ordinary with Stance. So today's random game of the day is a strange pick. The date kind of just came to me. I was born August 26th, 1974, but I was due September 17th, 1974. And if I were born on time, I would have been born 2 days before my dad's birthday. I know. That would have been, well, I kind of was a birthday present, even though I arrived early. And I thought it could be cool to look back at September 17th, 1974. Now, I'll let you know that the Yankees were playing the Orioles on that day. they lost, and they managed to get swept by the Orioles that week. And it wasn't a good showing for the Yankees, let me tell you. So Tuesday, September 17th, 1974, at Shea, because, oh, I think I told everyone this, but I'll tell you. My dad was born in 1941, my mom was born in 1947, my brother was born in 1978. All 3 years, the Yankees won the World Series. I was born in 1974, the Yankees played in Shea Stadium. That's my claim to fame. But me and any 1974 babies born before the end of October saw the Yankees win their 24th, 25th, and 26th championships when they were 24, 25, and 26 years old. So there's my connection to the Yankees. So not as cool as being born in a World Series winning year, but, you know, good enough. So 33,784 at Shea. The game duration, 2 hours, 15 minutes. Mainly because the game was 0-0 till the seventh inning. But let's go through the lineups because you know I love doing that. Al Bumbrey in left field. This is the Orioles. Rich Coggins in right, Bobby Gritch at second, Tommy Davis DH, Boog Powell at first. I met Boog outside his barbecue place at Camden Yards. Cool dude. Paul Blair, center field, Brooks Robinson, third base, Elrod Hendricks, catcher, and Mark Belanger at shortstop. Jim Palmer was starting for Baltimore, so yeah. Roy White, DH, Elliot Maddox, center field, Bobby Mercer, right field, Greg Nettles, third base, Lou Piniella, left field, Chris Chambliss, first base, Thurman Munson, catching, Jim Mason, shortstop, Sandy Alomar, second base, and Doc Medich was your starter. Sparky Lyle relieved him at some point in this game. Jim Palmer threw a complete game, didn't give up a run, Yankees lost 4-0, gave up 7 hits, struck out 3. So he didn't walk anyone either. Doc Medich pitched 7 1/3, gave up 3 runs on 5 hits. So not terrible. Wasn't a terrible showing at all. He walked 4. That's not great. Struck out 2. And then Sparky Lyle pitched an inning two-thirds, gave up 2 hits, 1 run, struck out 2, and, oh, okay. That run was on a home run. Let's see who hit it. Paul Blair, 2 on and 2 outs. That's not fun. Damn it, Sparky Lyle. I'm kidding. No, it wasn't, you know, I said the game was 0-0 till later in the game, but they weren't all 1-2-3 innings. Palmer had one in the bottom of the first. Medich had one in the top of the third. Palmer again in the bottom of the fourth, top of the fifth, bottom of the fifth. Those were all 1-2-3 innings for each starter. Bottom of the sixth was a 1-2-3 for Palmer. Bottom of the eighth was a 1-2-3 for Palmer. Good showing by him. And Sparky Lyle, after he gave up that home run in the eighth inning that put Baltimore up, whew, that was just not great. 4-0, because it was 1-0 when Blair hit the home run. It was a 3-run home run. Coggins and Davis were on base. And then Lyle had a pretty good top of the ninth. He gave up a single to Jim Northrup, but got Hendricks to ground out. I don't know if it's Belanger. Mark Belanger? I've never even heard of him. Fly ball to second. Sounds more like a pop-out. And Rich Coggins struck out looking. And then the Yankees went down, not quite in order. Sandy Alomar hit a fly ball to left. Roy White hit a single. Elliot Maddox flew out to center. Bobby Mercer hit a single. White advanced to third. So they threatened to score. And then Greg Nettles flied out to center to end the game. So the Yankees lost that game 4-0. And as I said, they played the Orioles the next night, also September 18th, 1974, lost 10-4. They played Thursday, September 19th, so my dad's birthday, his 33rd birthday, wow, and they lost 7-0 to the Orioles. That game was 2-10, the duration. The night before was the longest one because they scored 10-4, so it took a little longer, but it was 2 hours, still a very easy breezy game compared to some of the games that we've had to sit through recently, 2 hours, 43 minutes. So, yeah, the 1974 Yankees weren't much to write home about. And as I said, us 1974 babies don't really have that much to be proud of from that year. I actually remember being upset finding out as a kid that the Yankees played in Shea Stadium the year I was born, especially when I found out how many people I was related to were born during World Series years. I did an article 9 years ago, I think it was, where I was figuring out all of my family members, cousins, aunts, uncles, grandparents, how many people were born in a year in which the Yankees won the World Series. And there were a lot. I have a bunch of people that I know that were born in 61. That was an easy one. Like I said, my dad in 41, my mom in 47, my brother in 78, my Aunt Tina in 1939, my Aunt Helen 1937, I believe, right? They won in 37, didn't they? Now I gotta double check this. My dad would be horrified if I, you know, got this wrong. And speaking of my father, I should let you know that when I was researching for that article about my family members and, you know, when they were born and what year they were born and if the Yankees had won, I asked my father, without telling him what I was doing, I said, "Dad," because it was his sister, "what year was Aunt Tina born?" And he said, 1939, the Yankees won the World Series. It's exactly how he said it to me. Because that's how Gus was. So, yeah, let me double check this. I'm pretty sure they won that year, but I just want to double. Yeah, what am I talking about? They won 36, 37, 38, and 39. 41, 43. My Aunt Mary was born in 43. My Aunt Kathleen and Uncle Kevin, twins, obviously, with 2K names like that, 1950. Unbelievable. I'm so jealous of my relatives who were born in World Series winning years. Now, I don't think I have any relatives or kids of relatives born in the dynasty years. All the kids were born after that. My cousin Robert was born during the strike year in 94, and he's a big Yankee fan. So that's not a fun year to be a part of, you know. He was actually born April of 94, so they were playing when he was born, but then they stopped. So, yeah, the Yankees did not do well September 17th, 1974. Oh, well, what are you going to do? Coming up the rest of this week, Abby will be joining me, and hopefully we'll have some things to talk about. We have some Hall of Fame ballots to talk about, by the way. Not too many have been revealed, but the ones that have been revealed are kind of shocking. And we're going to talk about that this week because I'm pleasantly surprised by some of the choices that these writers are making. I know it's not going to be great because, you know, the more these ballots start trickling out, the angrier I'll get. But right now, I'm pleasantly surprised and good job so far by the people who have turned in their ballots. But I'll just tease you with that. We're going to talk about that coming up later this week. But for now, that's it for this episode of Locked On Yankees, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'd like to remind you that you can listen to this show in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Odyssey, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can watch and subscribe to us on YouTube. And when you get into your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Bets. Now make your second listen of the day Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. One more thing, if you could be so kind, please rate the podcast and spread the word about this podcast to your fellow Yankee fans. We'd really appreciate it. So enjoy your Tuesday, and I will talk to you all tomorrow.